Oh, that's right. Good afternoon, everybody. How you doing? Hey, I'm Ann Eller. Kind of stormy out there. In fact, my guest came all the way up from Lexington, Columbia area. He is Bill Dukes. For those of you that have been on an honor flight, you may have heard his name since he actually started the first honor flights here in South Carolina. He's a fascinating guy. He now is the South Carolina civilian aide to the Army from South Carolina, and he just keeps on trucking and doing all kinds of great things. I'm real pleased that he made the trip up here. How you doing today, Bill Dukes?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we had a bad storm and a tree fell in front of me. So,
how did you get around it?
No, the logging truck man, he stopped his truck, got his chainsaw out, and cleared the tree.
Now, that's South Carolina ingenuity.
That is pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, South Carolina ingenuity. Nothing ever keeps us from where we're going.
No, thankfully, and I met my schedule, didn't I?
Absolutely. You were here early, so that's terrific. Yeah. Well, how you been doing? It's been 2 or 3 years since we've had you up here.
Yeah, it sure has been. Yeah, I'm doing great. Yeah, we've done a lot of honor flights since that last time. You had the opportunity to, join us on one.
It was fabulous.
And, we're going to have our 21st honor flight in October of this year from Columbia. And then a year ago, as I shared with you, and we have the opportunity to talk about it a little bit, a year ago I was nominated and by the Secretary of the Army to be the civilian aide to the Secretary of the Army for the state of South Carolina. And I'm just loving that.
Well, that is a huge honor. We happened to look up what a civilian aide to the Secretary of the Army is, and this was an interview that Dr. Randy Groth did, and he said, when asked what attributes an aide candidate should possess, he said, I think it's individuals who have a genuine desire, love, and appreciation for our military that not only can say that, but have a history of doing things in support of that. And I can't think of a better candidate than you, Bill Dukes.
Wow. Well, that's exactly how I approached the job. When I was asked, the job was filled by just a great friend, Ike McLeese, who was the CEO of our Columbia Chamber of Commerce. And Ike just did a wonderful job. And I wasn't really familiar with how the job worked and what he was really doing.
That term loosely for a job, right? Because there is no monetary
coming
back.
No, you're right.
It's a volunteer
job. You're right. It's a volunteer. But Ike passed away. It was unfortunate that we lost Ike. But and then a good friend of mine, one of our retired generals in Columbia that's worked with me closely on the honor flight, called me one day, and when he's serious, he calls me Billy. And so he says, Billy, I got something I need to talk to you about. Our Army needs someone to represent them in the state of South Carolina to fill Ike's shoes. And I can't think of anyone better than you. And I was very humbled. I actually did not know what the responsibilities were. But I went to the internet. I started digging, just like you just read that article, and realized that, and I was looking for something to kind of fill a void, and that was the perfect thing. And so I had to then go through the process of being nominated, and there were probably 3 or 4 people that were nominated from the state of South Carolina. And I had some very nice sponsors, elected officials, and some friends in the community, and took about 8 months, and I was notified by the secretary that I had been selected to be in that position, or in the position of the civilian aide. It's a 2-year term, and you're reappointed every 2 years if you're doing the job that you're supposed to be doing, and I can serve for 10 years, and then I
Become a senior.
I can become an emeritus. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and still be involved. Yeah. So I'm I've got 1 year. This is my 1 year anniversary, actually.
Is it really?
It is. It is. Probably the 22nd of June last year. Yeah.
Wow. So it's just a little. Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I know when this article that we were reading about you was written, you had actually just taken over this. And in the last year, you know, we've had, they talk about cutbacks down there at Fort Jackson. Mm-hmm. We're talking about cutting back the military. We are cutting back the military.
Yes.
What have you been able to get out of and convince people that South Carolina needs that Fort Jackson? Because I know that's a big topic of conversation.
Well, yes,
there.
It is. You know, it's really two ways. We have to convince our community that the Army, and this is very, very important, the Army wants to be where the Army is loved. That's the bottom line. And we have responsibilities as a community. We have so many of our dependents that depend upon the services that our communities have and provide. We have many of our military families that live off the installation. Many of our dependents, the families and the young ones, go to school in our school systems. The Army wants to make sure that they have installations where the school systems, you know, meet their standards. We also try on the community side to convince the Army of what they need. You know, they need Fort Jackson. They need that basic combat training installation. But the Army will come back and say, well, you know, we have other places that we could, you know, do that also. But we're trying to make sure that they know that we have expansion capabilities. We have capabilities. We have space out there. We have the Columbia Midlands region, from the day that installation was deeded over to the Department of the Army, 98 years ago, in 2017 will be the 100th anniversary of Fort Jackson.
How about that? Wow.
And about 12,000 acres of land, almost 100 years ago, were given to the Department of the Army by citizens of Columbia, South Carolina, and it has grown since then. So one thing that we have a large piece of real estate, and by having that large piece of real estate and by ensuring that our training ranges and so forth are located in the middle of that ring, in that area, we don't create negatives for our neighbors. And so the people that are close to Fort Jackson, when we had a listening session in March to talk about the value of Fort Jackson and to beg of the Army to think of us and see us as a military-friendly community, people that came to that listening session said, yeah, we hear sounds, we hear noises, but we hear the bugler, and we hear practice ranges, but what we're really hearing is we're hearing the sound of freedom.
That's so important.
And that's how our citizenry, you know, looks at Fort Jackson. It's not a nuisance, you know. It's a treasure.
It is, and you know, South Carolina, I think, is very military friendly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as I was telling you before we came on the air, being from Maine, I don't ever remember the love of the military that is everywhere here in South Carolina. It makes a big, big difference. And I tell you, the other thing that I think is real important is all the people that have gone through Fort Jackson through the years have such a positive experience with South Carolina that how many military retirees come back to live in South Carolina?
That's right. That's
it's
right.
Huge.
Yes.
It's huge.
Yes.
The percentage is huge.
Well, and we also are very thankful, and you talk about what's happened over the past year. The governor, she has a military task force, and you know, it's the it's really a great program, because what they've addressed, Mr. Bill Bethay is the chairman of that, and what they have been addressing are military friendly pieces of legislation,
And like the education issue.
The education, the tuition.
Right.
And there's a interstate compact, you know, to ensure that as dependents move from one school district in Indiana to the school districts in South Carolina, if they've taken Indiana state history, they shouldn't be required to come to South Carolina and take South Carolina state history before they're qualified to get their, you know, diplomas. And so there is a compact, and South Carolina is one of the signatories, and now all 50 states are signatory to that. And one thing that we were able to do is the governor, and I appreciate her doing this, Miss Molly Spearman, our superintendent of education. I spent some time at Shaw Air Force Base. Now, why am I at Shaw Air Force Base as an Army guy? Well, we have a significant Army headquarters at Shaw Air Force Base. During the last base realignment, they consolidated and brought the Army Central Command to Shaw Air Force Base. So we have a significant headquarters there, and that Army Central Command is now the three-star general of Army Central at Shaw Air Force Base is the commander of the Inherent Resolve operation in Syria and Iraq. So South Carolina, the headquarters of Army Central, that general wears a third hat, and he is the commander of the Joint Forces, and General Terry. And so many people don't understand that. But they are interested in education issues and bringing good quality, the best of the best, to Army Central at Shaw Air Force Base. So there are questions about schools and the education situation. So well, what you know, we were able to do is wife of the Chief of Staff, General Glaser, it was very active where she had been. So there was a, we found a vacancy on the Interstate Education Military Compact. And so the governor, about 2 months ago, nominated and appointed Ms. Glaser, you know, to be there.
Well, that was helpful.
That was really helpful. Just makes it, I mean, we got a real person that understands, you know, the real issues of military families.
And, you know, military families, you know, the military is not like any business. You know, when a business goes to move into a new area, we're dealing with this in South Carolina with businesses coming in, they want to make sure that the education system is competent or equal to where they have come from. And that's sometimes a big question. So it's not out of question that the military would be looking at the same things.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I will tell you this, that if anyone wants to go Google the importance of education to the military, to the armed forces, whether it be Air Force, Army, Navy, or whatever, you will see that the talk is becoming much more important right now as the Army begins to form and develop criteria that it will be looking at as it continues to manage its force, and as it continues to look at installations that are underutilized. And there's going to be a consolidation, and it's referred to as BRAC. You know, they're talking about that, but the Congress is not allowing it right now. But there's going to have to be, because of the budget restraint, there's going to have to be some major decisions that are going to be made. It would be nice, I personally think it would be very good, and the Secretary thinks it would be very good to have the BRAC, because that takes the politics out of it. But if we don't have the BRAC, there's still the issue that we have got 20% of our installations that are underutilized, and you cannot, as a business, cannot justify that, because for the cost of maintaining that 20% that's not utilized, that's underutilized, that takes away cost for personnel, it takes away the benefits cost, it takes away the cost for training, for our readiness, and it takes away the cost that we would be investing in modernization, you know, of our, you know, Army.
Now, Bill, I know part of what you do, you're here in South Carolina, but then I do believe, don't you go to Washington, D.C. and meet with people
there?
Yeah,
it's a couple times a year. We do have the opportunity to come together. We have opportunities to meet with the Secretary. We have opportunities to meet with the leaders, you know, of the Army. And then we bring back, you know, their agendas, their priorities, and we talk with our leadership at Fort Jackson, leadership at you know, Army Central. And
how's that working? How's it working? Are we making progress with keeping the military here in South Carolina?
I believe we are. We're going to, you know, the listening session that we had back in March, we were threatened with the loss of up to 3,100 jobs at Fort Jackson, combination of civilian.
And then that affects the community.
Oh, absolutely. And not only there, but we're also threatened with that over in Sumter, you know, at the headquarters that I was referring to. And we will know, the first shot will be in the next probably 4 weeks that we will know what happens there. We, and Bill Dukes is always the optimist.
Okay.
We don't think we're going to get hit at the high level this go round. Now, the fear and the worry is when we go from 450
in our military
down to 420 in the Army. That's going to be a significant, because right now going to 450, we're still operating so that we can be effective with what we're doing right now.
Right.
And let's hope and pray that nothing bigger happens. But
yeah,
what we're doing right now, we can handle, okay? But if we start going down to 420, if we start heading down there, that becomes a slippery slope.
I'm talking about the Army specifically
as far as the number of 420, but all
and being
the,
able
services.
To fend off threats.
Yes.
This is what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
And, of course, you know, here they are talking in the news this morning. I heard that, you know, there could be some interior attacks, three or four, possibly over the weekend, the 4th of July weekend. And when you hear stuff like that, I mean, the military is setting up command posts around the country. That doesn't sound like it's insignificant. That sounds like it's pretty significant to me.
Well, not only the military, but all of our, you know, services, all of our police forces, all of our, you know, troopers, everybody. Everybody's going to have to just be. It's a different world. We're living in a different world. We are blessed. We're in a very patriotic state. This state recognizes, loves its military. We stand up the little you know, our children, you know, wave the flag. I was at two events on Sunday. I'm a Lutheran, so I started out in my traditional liturgical church, you know, Lutheran that morning, and then I went to a Baptist church for a patriotic celebration at 10 o'clock, and then I went to another Baptist church, a First Baptist Church in Columbia, at 4 o'clock.
I guess you were well blessed on Sunday, weren't you?
I was blessed on Sunday, but I'll tell you what, I got my Lutheran, you know, dose in the morning. But then I got the you know, the good old Baptist you know, flag waving and patriotism, and just an awesome experience. And the beauty of it was the children, you know, that are waving the flag, and they understand. They're very patriotic. But what's got to happen is our country, and this is just Bill Dukes talking, our country has just got to come, you know, has just got to face the fact that we're who we are because of a strong military. I firmly believe that.
Absolutely.
I served, and so many of my friends served, and you know, nobody wanted to mess with us, and it just seems like everybody wants to kind of mess with us now.
And they
ought not be able to do that.
They should not. I totally agree with you. I was going to tell the story. You went into the Air Force to be a pilot, and what was your problem?
Well, I was too tall.
They couldn't get you in the Air Force plane, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But you know what? It worked out great for me. I had the opportunity in this role, by the way, to spend time with junior ROTC cadets in our high schools. Mm-hmm. And I have the opportunity to interact with the ROTC students in our colleges and universities in South Carolina. And me being a graduate of the University of South Carolina. I went through the Air Force ROTC, and so I'm an example of you know what you can accomplish and how you can be blessed, you know, by serving your country.
Absolutely.
I'm who I am today because of you know, having
served.
You
never probably would have ended up in food service if it hadn't been the military.
It had not been the military.
Yeah.
And you know what? I fly today. And it's I've got a plane that I share with another gentleman, and I got my pilot's license as a result of service and using the GI Bill.
There you go.
So, I mean, I am totally blessed, and it all, you know, goes back to the military. And I'm blessed now again because I had this opportunity to be in this role as the you know, civilian aide.
Yes, it's a great story. When we come back, I'd love to just go through how Honor Flights started, because Honor Flights, I mean, it all started with you and your dad for South Carolina. And how that relates to everything that you're doing here today. And I just think that it's tough today to be able to do the type of things that you have had the opportunity to do. I think it is terrific that you've been able to do them, and we need more people to have that opportunity too, Bill.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that is one of the reasons I love sitting down and talking to people that have accomplished and done, because I hope in some ways that it inspires others to stand up and do.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to it when we come back.
Absolutely. Well, we are right here at WCRS. I'm talking with Bill Dukes. He is the South Carolina Civilian Aide to the Army. He's a pilot. He started out in food service at the Air Force, and he's had a fascinating career, whether it was working for Steak and Ale, Godfather Pizza, started Longhorn Steakhouse, then he started the Blue Marlin. Many of you have eaten at the Blue Marlin down there in Columbia in the Vista area, and then he added catering. He's got some great kids that help him do the job down there at the Blue Marlin, which has allowed him to go on and do even more. Certainly hope you're going to stay right here with us on WCRS, because coming up in just a minute will be South Carolina Radio News. How about raising $150,000 for water over in Tanzania? You never sleep, do you, Bill? Hey, we'll be right back. Don't you go away.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We are right back here with the one and only Bill Dukes. I tell you what, you can't... Honor Flights, I don't think, would be in existence here in South Carolina if it hadn't been the timing with Bill Dukes and your dad. You know, Bill, why don't you just give us the little version of what happened and why you decided to take your dad right there to the World War II Memorial?
Well, first of all, I'm going to go back and tell you that actually, to be honest, the first flight was out of Spartanburg, Greenville area,
okay?
Because the people up in Asheville had helped them put a flight together. But I was up in Asheville right after that flight had happened, and I got with them, and I said, well, I want to make it. I think it can be. I didn't say I want to make it. I think it can be bigger and better, mm-hmm. and we can serve more people. And that's when we really got to move on it. So my dad had served in World War II. My dad had never visited the World War II Memorial. I honestly didn't know about the World War II Memorial as such. And we made a plan, my brother and I, that we were going to take Dad up to see the memorial. We had to wait for about 6 months, 7 months before we could go up there because of schools and the kids and so forth. Well, we went up there in June of 2008, and it was just a very emotional experience. Dad was there. He had served in the Pacific, so he saw where he had served, in, you know, on the label of the battles. And, you know, he was at Leyte. And so he saw that that stone, and he started walking up to it, and then his grandkids came with him. And as I've told people whenever I go out and talk, I comment that if with all of today's technology, I would have given anything in the world to have been able to download what my father was thinking. But I could almost imagine what he was thinking. And then he started telling little stories and, you know, snippets of what had happened. And so it was a very emotional family gathering. And then
and something that probably he hadn't talked about before.
No, he had not.
And
not
that's
really.
that was the way guys were.
Exactly. And then so we saw all the people that were visiting the memorial. They recognized that this must be a World War II veteran. They came over and thanked him and so forth and so on. So I got back to Columbia, and then I started reaching out to some friends with the idea of can we move this thing forward and do something in Columbia, the Midlands. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, some very generous folks in that area individually. And so we started talking about it and said either we're going to talk about it or we're going to do it. And my wife had, by the way, told me something similar to that when I got fired one time. She said, this idea of doing something on your own, either do it or quit talking about it. And so that's another story. But we decided to go, move forward with it, and we started raising money, and we were able
to do
our first flight. Yep, it's $60,000 average per flight, and we raised enough money. We had some folks, by the way, that said this was in July of 2008, and we had some folks that said, you know, we can have all that money by sometime in 2009. I said, folks, our World War II veterans, you know, are leaving us,
right,
you know, at a pretty quick rate, and we don't have time to wait and go through committees and analyzing this thing. We just need to get out and make it happen. And we got some media support, and we were able to raise enough money to do that first flight in 2008. November of 2008. It was the week of Veterans Day. Now, I will have to tell you that I had to make a down payment on that airplane, and I said I would do it, and that really motivated me because I wanted to get my I wanted to get my down payment back. But I got it back, and I got more back. I mean, I got more back because that first flight was just such a great experience. I had my dad with me, but not only that, we had 101 or 105, I don't know, World War II veterans. I'll never forget the meeting that we had prior to the flight. We always have a planning meeting a month before, and here we were at the convention center. They in Columbia, they provide us the room at no charge, and we're there in a room, and there are 100-plus World War II veterans there. This is when we were only taking World War II veterans there. And I can tell you, 100 World War II veterans, not one of them would have ever thought in the twilight of their life that they would be around 99 fellow comrades that had fought in that war. And no way, they would not have ever visioned that that would ever happen to them.
You know, I you gave me the joy of being able to go on one, and I'll tell you what, some of the things, they got to the point where they were saying, hey, radio lady, I got a story for you. But I actually met two people that had not seen each other since they were in high school, and they reconnected there on that flight in Washington, D.C. And you talk about the kids and everything. You know, we went through a whole setup where the kids were there with flags, and they all the veterans went through to go to the memorial and everything.
Right.
And it just, you could just see, they may go home, and they may be full of aches and pains and not be able to do anything. But on that flight, they became alive, guys.
Alive. You just hit it. They became alive.
Yes. And
they had a new purpose in the life. I believe that we have added life to many World War II veterans because of their experience on an honor flight.
Yes. And I mean, and the seeing guys that, you know, even if they didn't know them, they connected with people on the, I mean, I heard about pigs being thrown out of airplanes over the over Southeast Asia, wherever it was. I mean, I heard stories that you were just like, wow.
Yeah.
And they just told them and they were so excited
yeah.
to have an audience to tell them and to have other guys that could say, oh, well, let me tell you about this. Let me tell you about that. It was an exciting experience.
Well, you know the stories. Of those that held the stories, you know, inside. And the other thing that Honor Flight does is it gives them that opportunity to speak and to share stories with others. And once they start sharing those stories with others, they get really, like you were saying, they get really excited about it. They're having fun doing it, okay? They're still remembering those that didn't come home.
Sure.
But they're still feeling very comfortable about talking with it. And then they get back home and they start talking to their families.
I think it opens up, it brings it back to life.
I've had families tell me that, you know, daddy went or mommy went, but daddy, for the most part, daddy went. And, you know, before he went on that honor flight, he didn't say anything. But when he got back, we can't get him to shut up, you know. But, I mean, they kept going and going and going. Now, have I lost some? Yeah, I've been to several funerals. And, but you know what? At least we took care of them before they went. And those are the great stories. I mean, I get so many letters and, you know, cards and, you know, phone calls and the greatest day of my life, you know. I mean, it just, you know, one of them said, you know, I got married and I got my sweetheart and this and that. That was the best day of my life until I went on an honor flight.
It is great. And you know, I think that being able to share and bring something out that their families haven't known about, and the fact that a guardian, usually a family member,
goes with them. Yeah, we've been encouraging
that. Yes, goes with them. Yeah. And I talked to so many of the guardians that were just like blown away that this was their granddad most of the time, that or maybe a son that is with them on the trip and had no idea what they had done or what they had been through.
I have told people that, you know, if they had that opportunity now, and I've got several of them lined up for this time, if they had that opportunity, you know, to take a day off, forget about work, go with your dad, go with your mom. We have several women that have gone with us. Go with your dad or mom, and I'll promise you that it will be a day that you will never forget. No, it's absolutely.
It is.
So we were able to do, we've done 20. We're doing our 21st flight. I shared with you a few minutes ago the generosity of our community and our state. I know that the upstate, you know, has done their flights, generosity upstate also. But the ones that we've been directly involved with have been the ones out of the Midlands, the Columbia Airport. And we helped start the Honor Flight group in Myrtle Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And we helped start the group in Charleston. And Myrtle Beach took 7 flights. They decided that they're not going to take any more. But we're still taking the applications from Charleston into Columbia. And Charleston actually is going to be taking a flight in September. So we've been working closely with them. So 20 for us, 7 down in Myrtle Beach, probably 7 or 8 in Charleston. So that's 1434, blah, blah, blah. That's about 3,000 plus World War II veterans that we've been able to affect.
And there's still so many more.
You know,
when they thought that you had pretty much reached the top, you found more veterans.
Yeah, we did. We went into the flight last time out of Columbia with a waiting list of 6 World War II veterans. Eight World War II veterans. We made phone calls to see if they were still, you know, interested in the flight. Two of them had passed away. We, as a board, decided that, a retired general, sage advice, he says, Billy, we made
must
a commitment.
Must be that one general.
That was that general. We made a commitment. And we're going to honor the commitment that we're going to take our heroes. As long as they want, you know, are able to go, we're going to take them. And so we're going to do that. And so we ended up down to 6. and made the commitment and started, raking the neighborhood, and the media helped us. And we ended up with 75 World War II veterans on our flight that we took in May. And we expect the same thing in October. We're taking our next flight out of Columbia October 14th. I think Upstate is taking one also in the fall. And, it's very exciting. So when does it stop? We're gonna keep the doors open. Maybe we get to one day that maybe my small little airplane, I'll have to carry one of them up there, you know. But one way, we're going to make it happen. You know, kind of like Angel Flight.
Absolutely.
You know, Mercy Flight. You know, Honor Flight with one airplane. That's how Honor Flight started.
Actually, it did.
You know, with the doctor up in Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
He started by taking two people in his small private plane.
Yeah. So it is a phenomenal organization. Yeah. If you are listening and you have a dad, now, is it just World War II or does it include Korean?
We're taking Korea now, and that's really been pretty cool, too.
The Korean War Memorial up there is just phenomenal. I mean,
it's
favorite. The day I was there, and I've been back
was
several
it
times.
It,
yes.
Oh.
And it is just
surreal.
Yes. Oh. That's what I'm talking about.
Surreal.
Yes.
Oh, it is. It's like it's alive.
Yes. It just gave you goosebumps.
I got them right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it does. It does.
And I tell you what I think is so neat about that is that the Korean government still sends a wreath, and it's fresh flowers, and they are just beautiful. And, you know, that is a commitment that stands. I've been there several times. Every time I'm there, it's a beautiful wreath.
I will tell you that 3 years ago, in 2013, we celebrated the 60th anniversary of the signing, the armistice, in Korea. And the Korean, Republic of Korea, and their people provided some medals, for those that served on the peninsula. They also provided a really nice book, and it was all paid for by the government, and we were able to get some of those. And we had an event in Columbia in 2013, and we had probably 300 Korean War veterans but they were the forgotten war.
Right.
But they're just so humbled, by having the opportunity to be recognized. You know, they never got anything.
Mm-hmm.
They never asked for anything.
Correct.
And but they're receiving. They received now, and we're helping them now. And now we're. By the way, we are now this year for the state of South Carolina, and this was again congressional, legislation that every state has the opportunity to participate in a 3-year. Commemoration of the 50th anniversary of Vietnam. And so South Carolina kicked off their 3-year commemoration January 1st of this year. So we're in the in a 3-year period of commemorating the those that served in Vietnam. And Fort Jackson actually had a event in May, and then they're going to have another event next year, and then they'll have a huge event recognizing Vietnam and all of our veterans in 2017, which will be the 100th anniversary of Fort Jackson.
Wow.
So
that's got something really to look forward to, isn't it?
So we've been talking about our World War II veterans.
Yes.
Can I just touch real quick on the soldiers that we have today?
Yes, absolutely.
Young, an all-volunteer army.
Yeah,
and,
we don't think about the fact that how different it was for World War II, Korea War, even Vietnam, and for their families.
Right.
It's much different today.
Yeah. So we have an all-volunteer army. I've been out to Fort Jackson when we call them the raw recruits come in, and they're scared. You know, their families, their mothers, their dads have entrusted, their baby boy, their baby girl to the U.S. Army.
Yeah. I've been at the USO when some of them are coming in down there at the Columbia Airport.
Yeah,
I tell you what, they look kind of
scared, aren't they?
they are.
Well, they go out there and then the drill sergeants talk to them. Well, you know how the drill sergeants talk. So it's a 10-week program.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the exciting thing. Here's the exciting thing. You go out there on Wednesday before graduation on Thursday. The moms and the dads and the family members have come to see
the transformation.
That boy and that girl, and it is a transformation. They are now young men and young women proudly wearing the uniform of the United States Army.
I hope we never lose that, Bill.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I hope we never lose that for our country and for our protection.
But there's so many of our people in this country that don't understand that.
I know they are. I know there are.
Our volunteer army, our volunteer military service is less than 1%, of our population.
And there's a lot of people that say, so they signed up for it, so why should we do anything? I mean, it is just amazing to me, and yet those are the same people that get to be free and do the things that they want to do and to be able to say what they want to say.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And those soldiers are, supported by some of the greatest people in the world.
That's
true.
Their families. You know, and that's one of the things that we wanted to touch on is, particularly when the National, as far as the National Guard families, we used to look at the National Guard as kind of a 2 weeks, have a vacation, go out and play in the woods and camp out. That's not what the National Guard is about
today.
The
National Guard is an integral part, of the Army.
I mean, we've had so many of the National Guard go for 6 months and then come back and go for another 6 months.
Absolutely. They have been right there in the fight. They've been right there in the game. And the Army today is an army of one. It's one army represented by the active duty, the reserve, and the guard. And that's how the Army is moving forward. It's those three pieces are critical. It's the three legs of the stool that is the U.S. Army. And we have a new commanding general at Fort Jackson now, and I am just so excited. He has reached out to our adjutant general, General Livingston.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, I'll tell you a story that's just great. I mean, it's just great. It shows, that commitment and that camaraderie and that relationship being built. General Cloutier is our new commanding general. He's a one star, and he was approved for his second star a couple weeks ago. And he's going to be, they call it pinning. Mm-hmm. He's going to be pinned his second star on Friday. And he and I were talking, and I told him what I thought was such a great opportunity for him coming in is to establish that relationship with our, National Guard. He was right on with it. He believes in it. And as we were talking over the past week or so, he said, Bill, what do you think about this idea? I want to call the Adjutant General, General Livingston, and ask him if he will host my promotion and pin on my second star.
Wow.
That is significant.
That's big.
That is a relationship. And that shows the importance of our active and it shows the partnership between our active and our National Guard. So it's a great day for South Carolina. I love it.
I think one of the things, too, is the way they have approached jobs for our National Guard.
Yes, yes,
but the
yes.
thing that sometimes gets forgotten, although I think it's getting better, is the families of National Guard families, because they live next door to us. They live right up the street. They don't live in a closed-in community on a base.
Right. With that support that the military community gets. You're
right.
Absolutely right. I've been involved in several deployments. I've watched. I've been out there with our National Guard, and it's like you and I were sharing a few minutes ago. Your boss, some guy may be sitting at the dinner table at night with his family. His boss calls and says, "Hey, George, you got to pack up tomorrow, and I need you up in New York for a couple days, 3 days, 4 days, maybe." And hangs up the phone. The wife says, "What was that?" "Well, honey, I got to go to New York for 4 days." "You got to do what? I'm going to be left with this. With that." "Well, how about right down the street?" Another guy gets a phone call, and it's his boss, and he says, "George, I'm here to calling you to let you know that we're going to be getting orders to be deployed for 6 months." And then he hangs up the phone.
Yeah. How would you like to be that wife?
Wow. And then you got the family that said, my dad's gone for 4 weeks or a week or 2 weeks. And then you got somebody over there that they say, how about your husband? Does he ever have to go anywhere? Well, as a matter of fact, he's deployed right now, and we won't see our husband and our daddy for another 6 months.
Yeah. You know, some of the greatest things you see on, whether it's YouTube or on TV, is when that dad comes home.
The homecoming.
Yes. I mean,
how about the surprise ones?
Yes, those are phenomenal. Yeah, whether it's out on the football field or coming into a classroom, they are awesome.
How about a story that I heard from our new general
a week ago,
is there was a young man that was helping our troops in Afghanistan.
Is this the private Afghan?
Yeah.
Private Afghan, yep.
And he, well, that was not his name.
Okay.
But he got injured over there, and the Marine Corps made arrangements for him to come back to the States to get medical, you know, treatment. This young man loved the United States. He wanted to join our Army.
Wow.
He came to Fort Jackson as a raw recruit.
Mm-hmm.
The day before he graduated, he became a naturalized citizen.
Wow.
His name, they gave him the name that he had to have a name.
Okay.
He's Private Afghan.
Private Afghan. That's where that story came from. That is a cool story.
Isn't that neat? I mean, that's, you know, and he had tears. He said, the general said, the young man had tears. You know, he says, I'm just so proud to be an American.
You know, we need more of that,
wow.
Bill.
Pretty
we need
cool.
more of that, don't
Pretty
we?
Cool.
We do. Absolutely. Yep. Well, you know, I it's been too long since we've sat down and talked. We've had a lot of catching up to do, and this sure has been an awesome experience to have you sit down and kind of fill us in. Kudos on your new job, voluntary civilian aide to the Secretary of the Army. I know that you can tell by the way you talk about it and the way you feel about it that it's in your heart.
Well, I'm loving it.
And it's
I'm
great.
Loving the relationships. Yeah.
It's great to be able to have somebody in that job that loves it and can do what needs to be done for our military.
Thank
you know,
you.
You've been listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. Yes, I'm Ann Eller. Yes, my very special guest, Bill Dukes. If you're ever down in Columbia, down there in the Vista area, you got to stop by the Blue Marlin. They do a lot of awesome food. I've eaten there. The first time he came here, I hadn't, but I've eaten there several times. It's really just a nice, comfortable place to eat.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
It's very comfortable.
Thank you. Well, by the way, General Cloutier's from Maine.
Is he really?
Yes.
How about that?
I just connected on that. I just thought about that. Yes.
How about that?
And we had dinner with him, and he had grits.
He had grits. How about that?
And collards.
He's becoming a Southern guy.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Bill.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. That's going to do it for us. Bye-bye, everybody.